Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome on back to the 40K segment of the Wide World of Wargaming. As always, I am your host, Vince Morgado, and joining me in his sophomore appearance, Mr. Ben Neal.
Thanks for having me on again.
We are so happy to have you back, and then once again, after another great success with your Space Marines. Unfortunately, Mike and Alex are out. For those of you who do not know, Alex just got engaged this weekend, so congratulations to him. And Schwartz is off doing whatever banker waspy stuff Schwartz does. Let's just jump right in. We are going to be talking about the Harvester before we get into some of the new upcoming rules for Space Marines. And I want to poke my head into one other event just so we can all see exactly how wild the new Codex is running. Ben, you went to the Harvester. You placed 6. How different was this from your previous Vanguard Vet madness? I'm looking at it right now. It doesn't look very different except a gigantic squad of... Are those Centurions with flamers?
They certainly are.
Okay, White go. Just go.
Centurions are my new favorite thing in the entire Space Marine Codex.
I'm sorry, you said White Scars?
White Scars, Assault Centurions.
Okay, you got to tell the people about this.
Yeah, so I was running Gilliman, still is my Warlord, which after this event, he's going to be out because he's not as needed anymore. But so he gives a +1 advance and charge to all Imperium. There's a White Scars Relic that gives +1 advance and charge to all White Scars within 6. Then there's a psychic power called Ride the Winds that gives +2 to advance and charge to a White Scars unit. And then the White Scars chapter tactics are advance and charge and fall back and charge. So these Centurions can advance and charge with +4 to advance and charge. And then there's a 1 CP stratagem to charge 3d6, pick the 2 highest. They can also outflank. So if there's not enough terrain, they can just hide off the table and then charge with +4.
And that's on a base movement of what?
4.
I mean, okay. Yes, I can see why they would need that much buffs. But still, if one thinks about it rightfully, that's a possible 4, 6, and then 3d6 take the 2 highest +4. Yep. So it's a possible 26-inch charge.
Yeah, they would consistently charge things that started the turn 20 inches away from them.
Jesus. That reminds me of the old Bretonian days. That actually brought back some really good memories there. Thanks for that. And so that was, I don't want to call it a Death Star, but I mean, when you stick that between what you've already described on here as your two, you know, kind of do-it-all Vanguard Vet squads, and then you're about to free up more points by dropping Gilliman down to what exactly?
So I dropped Gilliman for just a captain as the Warlord because he can run the Warlord trait from Victrix Guard, which gives one turn of reroll any wound rolls for all the Vanguard Vets within 6 of him. And then I can put 3 Eliminator squads also just to kill the pesky Ironstone guy. We'll talk about it later.
I'm glad you brought up Eliminators. We had a bit of an argument last weekend, me and Schwartz, about what's better for the points. 3 Eliminators or a Vindicare, because they're about competitively priced. Is there a reason you would go with the Eliminators over just an Inquisitorial Operative?
Yeah, because you lose your combat doctrines if you bring a Vindicare.
Really? That makes sense.
Yeah, the Space Marines FAQ, if you requisition operative sanctioned, you lose your combat doctrines for the whole army.
That's a pretty brutal ruling, I would think.
Yeah. No assassins allowed in Space Marines.
Wow. I mean, it's not... You could argue that it's kind of fluff loyal in a way, but then at the same time, 40K hasn't really been fluff loyal on tabletop in like 10 years.
Oh, yeah. I just like the sort of benefits to not running soup that they put into the new book. I like it a lot.
Well, it's almost more a punishment, right? I mean, you literally can't, because my first thought when I saw how good all of the different chapters were is, oh, dear God, why wouldn't I just run like 2 patrols in a brigade.
Yeah.
But I understand it, you can't do that because as soon as you do, you lose all the chapter tactics.
So you can mix Space Marine chapters. You just can't add in things that don't have the Angels of Death rule, which like my list is White Scars and Ultramarines.
And so Ultramarines,
I don't get combat doctrines, but I don't get any of the supplement-specific abilities, like the plus one damage for white scars or the move and shoot as if they were stationary for Ultramarines.
Right, right. And that, have you practiced all of that? Have you mapped all that out? And do you think it's a worth it's a worthwhile trade?
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, I don't even have guns in my Ultramarines side of the army, so moving and shooting with no penalty doesn't help. Mm-hmm. And that the White Scars plus one damage, I don't need four damage on the Centurion assault drills. They're good enough with three.
Yeah, I can't imagine there's too many things that are going to tank that many wounds. I mean, let's just put it this way. What have you killed? What has anything stood up to that charge yet?
Of the Centurions charging in?
Yeah.
No, they have killed everything they touched. They can kill two knights in one round of combat without double fighting. Because they have three attacks base, plus one for Angels of Death, no minus to hit, strength 10, minus 4 for 3 flat damage. And then reroll hits a 1 from Gilliman within 12 of them.
You're not foreseeing any real drop-off in damage when you pull Gilliman?
No, because I still have the con on a bike in the new list, so he gives the reroll hits a 1. He just has to be a lot closer to them.
You're pretty confident in running an extremely assault-heavy Space Marine list in what a lot of people have declared to be a very shooting-dominant meta.
Yeah, so it was actually a lot of fun playing at Harvester because their terrain is really interesting. Like, they have a very specific terrain setup for each board. Some of them may be tons of ruins. Some of them might be completely open. And the nice thing about this is I have enough points on the table that I can put both Vanguard Vet Squads, the Centurions, and the Librarian all into reserve.
Oh, right. And then the first turn, essentially, you charge. All you need is your 2+1 characters and the guy casting to be in range of casting on the Centurions, and you're probably going to make, 9-inch charge with a standing +2 and rerolls?
Yeah. Well, and then I have a Cassius for the +2 charge for the Vanguard veterans, so they're at 7-inch charges at a deep strike.
Oh, dear God.
Because unfortunately, that doesn't stack with Gilliman's +1, but it's still good.
Oh, that's... Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about... And it's not a 7-inch rerollable charge on the Vanguards?
On one unit because of Veil of Time, the psychic power.
Uh-huh. And then you're getting the 3d6 reroll on the Centurions?
No reroll on the Centurions, but 3d6 +4.
Got it. 3d6 take the 2 highest +4. Okay. Yep. So you're pretty confident that you're getting two units in on that first initial charge, and then after that it's just a question of, you know, trapping one model inside the 350 mil bases.
Mainly it's using the fly on the Vanguard veterans to wrap something, and then there's a stratagem for the Centurions where they get to add D3 to their consolidate.
Right.
They can just pile into the unit that's being wrapped up by the Vanguard veterans and be safe that way.
I mean, also, if you came in from two different sides, the base size on a Centurion is massive. So it really isn't that hard to multi-charge with them, at least.
And plus, even if they can't wrap something, they're just so unbelievably tanky.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, they're, many wounds on a T5 2-up.
Yeah, they're 4 wounds apiece.
And I thought it was 4, but I wasn't positive.
Transhuman physiology, where a 1, 2, or 3 to wound unmodified always fails. They just are not easy to shift at all.
And you've been getting a lot of traction out of that rule. That was a source of a lot of argument on this podcast over whether or not that was going to be of use.
Yeah, actually, in the very first game I played was against Triple Knights. And two of them charged one of my Vanguard Vet squads. Strike first for Ultramar, took out half of one of the knight's healths. And then when he tried to step on me, they were -1 to hit from Tigerius, because that works in combat. And between transhuman physiology, I lost 1 storm shield to 2 knights stepping on me. And then fought again in the normal fight phase, and then 3 CP fought again and killed both of them.
That's a quick way to throw away 600
point model and 8 command points, but take out two.
I think 8 command points is probably worth. I mean, something that can be regenerated is definitely worth removing two borderline, you know, army defining models, because you probably killed between 600 and 800 points, right? Between those two,
it was a Valiant and a Gallant.
Yeah, Gallants are cheap, but a Valiant, not so much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what we call a bargoon, I think. Did you run into any of the other gentlemen in the top five? I suppose we should name names. John Paul Mouet leading off with his Aletok Eldar. Matt Evans bringing out the Tyranids, consistently one of the lower-performing codexes, but picking up second. Colin Sherman with his Tau, Matt Czar with the Imperial Soup, Tanner Herbert with from Portland with his Chaos, Denny Page, who I've played before, came in just behind you. I played him many moons ago when he was running Corn Dogs. I think it was the last time I ran into him. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely some names at this event. Let's take a look. Did you run into any of them?
Yeah, so I played Tanner in round 3, and we had a great game. neither of us were running hardly any guns, so it was just a full close combat. He had 70 Demonettes, I think.
Holy
70
God. Demonettes,
3 Discordants.
Yep.
And then a mixed Chaos Space Marine detachment with Demon Prince Aramon, Big Yuta Zangors for the Dark Matter Crystal, some bikes. It was just a slugfest in the middle, but I was able to hit him pretty hard after he hit my screens, and he actually shifted his Discordants to counter my Centurions, but then move in advance and charge +4. They ran all the way to the other side of the table, and his Discordants were out with their dicks in the wind.
And you essentially just played dodge the Disco Lords. You didn't trust your Centurions to come out of that one on top.
Yeah, it was the job of the Vanguard veterans to go kill the Discordants, because if they charge in, Strike First or Ultramar will pick them up. And I was able to table him on turn 4.
Wow. Well, the big CC battles like that can tend to go one way pretty quickly.
Yeah, day 1 I actually played against 150 different Demonettes through 2 games.
Wow.
And killed all of them.
Yeah, I can't imagine Demonettes would do a whole lot when you're between wounding the Centurions on 5s and probably bouncing off a lot of Storm Shields. I can't imagine you were really worried about Demonettes.
And Centurions throwing 72 Hurricane Bolter shots plus 12 Flamers.
The Flamers probably was the secret sauce, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can't. That's brutal.
And then round 4, I played JP with his Eldar. And unfortunately for me, we got a table that did not have any line of sight blocking terrain. So I was forced to throw most of my army into reserve. And then he was able to screen out my stuff with his flyers and swooping hawks and stuff. And did not end well for me. I think he tabled me on turn 5 or so.
Yeah, Eldar Flyers are not getting the nerf that a lot of other armies would have gotten by now. And that's pretty fucking disappointing to see. But you know how it is. Some armies get things and everybody else doesn't. I want to ask one quick question. What is your experience against the Contorted Epitome?
So I played against that twice on day 1 in both of the games against the Demonettes. The first one, he had 80 Demonettes and then Alpha Legion Dreadnoughts. I think he had 3 Derridaeos and 2 Contemptors with C-beams in the back.
Yeah.
But in game 1, the Epitome, I was able to charge it with the Centurions after clearing out the screen of all the Demonettes.
And you just tore it apart.
And then in the game against Tanner, he charged it up with one of his Discordants and a big unit of Demonettes. But then my Vanguard vets that were hiding in a building were able to charge, and then with Fly, they could jump over the screen and hit it with a bunch of hammers and kill it. So I didn't really have to try and fall back from it. In the first game I played it, he did bring the Forbidden Gem on it, and he used it to shut off my null zone in my shooting phase, because he was able to get null zone and jump right between both of his Demonette units, but then he was able to shut that off, which allowed Gilliman to go dunk his Celeste later. good call by him to shut off that null zone, because otherwise those Demonettes would have been
evaporated.
Yeah.
I mean, Demonettes are quite... I don't want to say that the Centurions are the perfect counter to Demonettes, but, I mean, they pretty much are, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Demonettes
and Gene Stealer Cult.
You're not having any trouble with a lot of Gene Stealers or a lot of the big guys? What are they called? Matt. Aberrants?
Yeah, I play Matt all the time. Because, we live in the same
city. He's on your squad. He's on your team.
We flew up together. And that one unit of Centurions beats entire Gene Stealer Cult armies because they can't show up within 12 of it, because then Auspex Scan will just delete an entire unit. Mm-hmm. They'll delete another unit in Overwatch. And then Transhuman Physiology means that even your Rock Saws with Strength 10 plus 1 to wound are only wounding on a 4 plus.
Oh, wow. So, like, just for everyone, I mean, explain the impact of Transhuman Physiology. I mean, what really, in game terms, explain to people that effect.
Just like what the stratagem does, or
the rule, and then kind of what you would use it against, and what situations you would use it or hold it. I mean, where do you find it the most effective?
Yeah. So anytime they have a bunch of shots that are strength 6 or higher going into the Centurions, or if they're going to hit the Vanguard vets, if they have reroll wounds, it's much less effective. So like Eldar with Doom, or Tau with a command and control mode, because they still get to reroll all those failed wounds.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's really good against Space Marines, because normally like a Repulsor Executioner is wounding Centurions on a 2+, rerolling ones with a lieutenant with his laser destroyer.
Yeah.
Now he got wounding on a 4+, rerolling ones, which is a big difference.
Yeah, it's a full third of the dice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there was some debate on this show. A gentleman named Anthony D'Amore, you might have heard of, pretty good with it, pretty famous for Death Watch, has said that he is not a fan of that rule at all. He just doesn't think it applies to in enough situations.
I mean, it's great on the Vanguard vets who are only tough 4. Mm-hmm. So, like, the example of an Imperial Knight trying to step on them, going from wounding on 2s to wounding on 4s. Is a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it really does work better. Would you say it works better the lower the toughness you are?
Yeah. I mean, it works best, obviously, if you have a big unit that you can throw it on, and also if you only have one of the unit that can be attacked.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if they could get line of sight to both my Vanguard vet units, and I throw it on one, well, now they can just shoot the other one.
The other squad's getting lit up.
The Centurions are great, because I only have one unit of Centurions. I can make them -1 to hit for a stratagem when they advance. So now their only target is a -1 to hit T5 unit with 24 wounds and a 1-up save and cover that any rolls of 1, 2, or 3 fail to wound. That's just not efficient for them to shoot at.
No.
But they don't have any other options.
Right, right. How do you feel? Have you practiced at all against Dark Eldar?
A little bit. I've only played 1 or 2 games against Dark Eldar. The hard part of that is just getting to the Ravagers if there's not enough terrain on the table.
Yeah, because the Disintegrators, I mean, eventually they do start cutting into you.
Yeah, and the high AP on the Disintegrators does hurt the Centurions a lot.
Yeah, because no Wimble save.
Yep.
But, and I mean, you don't want to be spending... Like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Any, like, grotesque heavy list is not really a problem, just because it has to get in my face so I can hit it back really hard.
Right, and they can't attack multiple times in a turn, whereas you are. Plus, I think every time they fail a field, every time they fail a save, basically a Centurion is pulling one off the board.
Well, the Centurions are 3 damage, and the Grotesques are 4 wounds. So
oh, okay.
I still have to get 2 through. But there's just so many attacks, and a well-placed Null Zone can just completely obliterate a unit.
Yeah, Null Zone's an old-school one of the best powers probably in the history of 40K against the largest number of units.
Yeah, I mean, the changes to it in this new book are great, too, because going down to a 7 to cast, and then now it affects units within range, not models as well.
Yeah.
It's huge.
The rules have started to, you know, kind of, I don't want to say, well, I'll just say it. I mean, they're starting to affect units within range again, whereas for a little while they kind of started to lean towards models. And I start to worry if maybe that's going to start pushing some of these things over the edge.
Yeah, I think they have to be really careful with the size of their auras. Like the Ironstone.
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
Yeah, it's only a 3-inch aura, so you can't fit your entire army there usually, but you can still fit enough stuff. But, I mean, it's the difference of, like, Sigmar has gone to almost completely wholly within auras.
Yeah.
But they're wholly within 24 inches instead of within 12 or whatever.
The Which one
doesn't really change the game. It's just a slight different wording, really.
Well, it does make a difference when you start to get, you know, when unit size and, you know, kind of how units have to maneuver in a game start to matter, especially when there's large pieces of terrain scattered around a board. I think is where that kind of comes in. The one that tipped me off to this being maybe an issue was Iron Father Pharos and his really, really not fair, cheap, basically Space Marine custom force field.
Oh, yeah.
that one made me – I flipped out when I saw that.
Yeah.
That's especially bad. When, like, that's just a bad
the
rule.
And the Custodes Shield are both modeled within, but this new one is units within.
Yeah, I mean, it's they kind of – I don't know how they tried to, like, sneak both in. It's models within units within 6 inches. It's like, why didn't you just – like, you could have made that so much simpler. And what you did, in effect, was give either whole armies of Dreadnoughts or, you know, a squadron of Land Raiders or Repulsors or whatever you want, a 5-up invul save that basically no one else can have – on top of already having maybe the most efficient first turn shooting in the game.
Yep.
And it's kind of, you know, you kind of wonder, did they test this? And then you realize, oh, it's Space Marines. Of course they did.
Well, I don't know, because there was that Salamander stratagem that leaked a couple days ago that looks like they did not play test that one.
Was this the one that, remind me,
the self-sacrifice stratagem?
No, I haven't seen this one. Please.
So it's a stratagem that got... There was a picture of it a couple days ago where you pick one of your Salamander's infantry units at the start of your opponent's shooting phase, and any of the infantry units from your army within 6 of that unit can only be shot if they're the closest. Now, what you can do is just put it on a Salamander's character who already can't be shot, and now every single infantry unit in your army, not just Salamanders, in your army, within 6 of him, also cannot be shot unless they're the closest. And then you can have scouts up front. So your entire army is immune to shooting, which I hope they FAQ that immediately.
I was going to think, this sounds like one of the things that gets hit with an errata basically the day it drops.
Yeah, and they say, oh, can't use on a character.
You could argue that you're not allowed to use it on a character now.
Yeah, well, it's not out yet, so they may do the Space Wolf treatment and errata it the day the Codex comes out and say, we're sorry, we messed up.
This one got past the editing crew, boys. Don't worry, we took care of it. Let's pop a look at a couple other of these lists and see who stands out. I do want to I do want to test a theory on JP's list. Yeah, I was right. It was Flyers. I mean, that's kind of a given at this point, but I still want to check. Matt Evans from your squad, very nice. I like the 35 Gene Steelers on the Swarm Lord. Might as well call that automatic at this point. Interesting that he brought guard allies instead of just more Gene Steelers.
Yeah, so he wanted to try out at least some shooting in the list. So he brought a pair of tank commanders, and he seemed to like how they performed a lot.
Well, he brought one that you don't see a lot. He brought a demolisher.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know, but
yeah, as a longtime guard player, I would not bring a demolisher in this edition. I just don't think that they justify themselves. The thing about the demolisher was it was always there to remove something in one shot. That was the whole point. Yep. And there isn't anything it can kind of do that to anymore.
Yeah, I just prefer the long range on the battle cannons. Just sit in the back and shoot every single turn.
Yeah, I'm trying to, start a movement to make Vanquisher cannons great again. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's ever going to happen. I do want to look at Colin.
Make them flat six damage.
Well, no, I think they should just be two shots. I think they should be heavy too.
That too. That make them like a variant of the laser destroyer on the repulsor executioner. It'd be similar to that.
Well, though. It's just if you think about it, they're so inferior to a battle cannon with a single shot.
Oh yeah.
It kind of doesn't make sense. And a second shot doesn't even come. Their top level damage still is a third less than a full damage than if you did a perfect battle cannon shot.
Yeah, Tau railguns on hammerheads are the same way.
Yeah, they don't really seem to understand that you don't want to introduce variants and a lower average. you kind of want to have one or the other. It's like you've got variants and a really good high end with a battle cannon. With the Vanquisher, if you gave it two shots, you would basically guarantee that if they both go through, you're doing, 6-7 damage on average.
Yeah.
Whereas with a battle cannon,
I bumped it up to four shots, which was great.
Oh Jesus, a four shot Vanquisher would make every other gun in guard unplayable.
Well, you get the four shots from a grinding
advance. Right, right. Okay, that's fair. That might be why they don't do it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even then, if you think about it, you're talking about two shots with a Vanquisher is 12 wounds compared to 12 shots with the Battle Cannon is 36. So the disparity is even further apart. Four Vanquisher shots would still only be 24 wounds.
Yeah.
So, but one day they will make my Vanquisher better than it has been being the really lame little brother to the battle cannon. Taking a look at Mr. Sherman's Tau, I'm just going to try to count the commanders here. I'm confused. One. Only two? Question mark?
There's a third one.
Where? I see.
Right at the bottom.
One. Two.
I see three.
Oh, I got him. Okay. Yep. All right. I see three. Ion Blaster. Has the Melta spam fallen out of favor then?
I think so.
Any particular...
Unfortunately.
You would think that with people starting to bring vehicles again, you would kind of start to gravitate back to that, especially when the rest of your list is, I mean, three Riptides with burst cannons and Pathfinders?
Yeah, so the list he has is very similar to Seeker's list from Nova. It's very similar.
I just wonder, how do you bite vehicles with this?
I mean, you kill one really well per turn with the three Riptides, and then the three commanders can sort of kill some other ones decently well. They're not as good against Strength 8, but they're great against Strength 8. Or T7.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I mean, T8 or T8's just a wall. I mean, you're...
Yeah, Rip... I mean, Riptide can kill one knight per turn with Focus Fire Strategy.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Command and Control mode.
And I mean, other than that, you're talking about bare minimum fire warriors, three cadre, all the marker lights in the world, and then, oh, hey, look, there's all the tactical drones I was looking for.
Yeah.
And there you go. Like we said, you have to imagine that Richard Siegler is kind of going to be the standard bearer for Tau going forward. Nobody expected him to come out of that tournament as the winner, I think.
Yeah, I just love his playstyle compared to a lot of other Tau lists. Because it's really mobile, it's really in your face, which is the way that I like to play mine. My Tau list that I run is 3 Riptides and then 90 Fire Warriors, which is just super fun
okay,
to play.
Okay, I want to ask you about that because this has been one of my ideas. If I was ever going to pick up Tau, it would be mass Fire Warriors. When you play that,
yeah.
Are you doing kind of the... You're not playing it like a guard army where it's kind of... You set up a line in the middle of the board, and then anything that comes into 24 just gets blown away. You're kind of doing cover in advance, right? You're moving as blocks.
Yeah, so I run 2 big bricks of 40 with a fire blade right behind them, and then all my characters in the middle, and then the Riptides filling in the rear, because Dark Strider lets them all fall back and shoot. Turn 1, they can Mont Ka, so they advance and shoot with no penalty. And then turn 2, they Kion with Shadow Sun, so they reroll all failed hit rolls. The Ethereal gives them a 6-up feel no pain. They're only 7 points a model.
Yeah, don't remind me.
3 shots, but strength 5. The Fire Warriors kill entire knights with their shooting. It's hilarious.
That's just sad. I mean, I'm doing the math, and it's definitely possible, but like... You have to imagine how bad that guy feels to have, you know, like we said, a 300 to 500 point knight just evaporate in front of a block of fire war. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, because 80 Fire Warriors throws 240 shots with +1 to hit and +1 to wound against one target.
And obviously there's going to be marker lights on top of that.
Yeah, that's the +1 to hit and reroll.
I was looking for the rerolls in there.
Yeah, and then Focus Fire for +1 to wound, and then 6 ups to wound or AP -1 with one of the Warlord traits.
I mean, there you go.
That's how Tau does. They're really good against one target per turn.
One thing at a time. It's it's surgically removing like one limb a turn, basically.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to look at Matt Czar's list, and then we'll go ahead and wrap up this particular segment. Ah, man, after my own heart. Emperor's Wrath Artillery Company, only 1 Wyvern, which makes me very sad. There you go. There's the 2 tank commanders.
He's got a squad of 2 Wyverns.
Oh, is it a pair? Okay.
Yeah, just squadroned up.
And then no Hammer of Sundrance. He elected not to take a Emperor's Fist, which is definitely different. Normally, you would see that almost as an auto-include. And then of course, because that's the way you do it, he brought 3 Caladius Grav tanks, and that's despite the nerf and despite the points increase.
Yeah, so at this event they did use the pre-nerf rules. So he unfortunately was forced to play 30 points down because he put them in as the new rules, because there was a few people who added the old rules and a few people who added the new rules. And they just decided day of that they were going to use the old rules.
Okay. Well, still, I mean, they're still highly effective and efficient, and that's why he got 4th. Because I know he didn't do it with that guard, with the rest of that guard army. just there ain't no way around that. That'll kind of wrap up talking about the Harvester. Definitely a good spread of factions here in the top 10. I mean, I don't think I see anything more than 2 of anything. You and is it Jace Reason bring with a pair of Marines? Oh, there's 3 Chaos. There's 3 Chaos. But yeah, other than that, everybody's unique.
Yeah.
So we're talking about 7 different factions in the top 10 of a Premier 40K event. That's not bad. All right. We also do have the leaks on the Iron Hands and Raven Guard Relic. We did talk about the Iron Stone, probably pissing everyone off because that's going to be ridiculous. just going to go ahead and repeat that just so people realize how this is fucked up. When resolving an attack, mating it's an Iron Hands vehicle unit within 3 inches of a friendly model with this relic, reduce any damage by one to a minimum of one. Basically, this is what? An Eldar Serpent Shield for Iron Hands?
But even better, because it works in combat.
Oh, Christ. Wow. I mean, at least it's to a minimum of one. So, you're not neutralizing full rounds of attacks.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to see a shift away from the 2 damage and D3 damage meta with this, because that just completely shuts it down. Like, Tau Riptide's only doing 1 damage a hit with their burst cannon.
It's not going to be enough. The other thing is, if you think about the Iron Hands chapter tactics, basically it means that unless you're doing D6, you know, this is going to bring back last cannons, you know, to put it simply. Because if you're not doing serious damage to them every turn, you're not reducing their efficiency at all.
I mean, you have to, in Iron Hands, you have to kill the vehicle. Pretty much. Otherwise, it's going to heal for 6 plus D3 wounds in the next turn.
Yeah. This is rough. I mean, between that and the amount of, like you said, the amount of hull repair, you're going to have to really, people are going to have to start bringing very, very dedicated anti-vehicle. Eldar flyers are not going to do enough against this, actually.
No. So speaking of the Eldar flyers, what I want to use the Ironstone for is 3 Iron Hands Xiphons with a captain on a bike with the Ironstone who sits in the middle and babysits them.
For those who don't know, the Xiphon Interceptors have a very special missile launcher that I never remember the stats of, along with 2 twin las cannons.
Yeah, and they can move and shoot with no penalty, and they get +1 to hit against fly. Yep. So goodbye, Eldar flyers.
Yeah, I mean, and because you're another flyer, you don't at all care about the range, the -1 range bonus. Because you just get, I mean, literally right in their face and blow them away. And they're relatively cheap that you really, I mean, even if you do roll poorly on saves or they roll hot on damage, if you do lose one, you're still probably going to out-trade them and distract them long enough with those units that they can't do the damage they need to do to your objective holders.
Yeah, I mean, with them next to the Ironstone, it takes 3 Crimson Hunters to kill a single
diamond. Oh my god. Oh, Iron Warriors are going to be Iron Hands are going to be a freaking problem. I remember saying that I didn't like them the most when their tactics came out, because I felt it was, you know, they were all useful, but they were very situational. Now I'm seeing that Iron Hands probably really are going to be the best out of all of them. Very close second, I would say, tied between Ultramarines and White Scars.
I think Raven Guard has a nice niche in killing the Iron Hands.
Well, we'll definitely
just taking out characters.
We'll definitely get to that when we go down there, and I will let you go at length. The next one we'll look at is, you know, it's not as exciting. It's a special axe, which no one is going to use if you have options. The Axe of Medusa is strength +3, AP -3, and straight 3 damage. So that's not terrible. But again, what you're giving up is opportunity, you know, is, what do you call it? You know, return on investment. You don't want to waste a free relic slot on a power weapon when you have the Ironstone as possible, almost no matter what list you're running.
Yeah. So it's kind of the trade is, do you want a 40 point Thunder Hammer or do you want a 5 point Power Axe +1 CP for the extra relic?
Yeah.
Because the Space Marines can take unlimited relics, because it's just 1 CP. There's no limit on the stratagem in the new Space Marine book. So you can bring as many relics as you want, as long as you dump that many CP at it, which some lists will like, some will not.
Yeah. The next one is the... oh my god, they need to come up with better names. The Aegis Ferrum. Primaris model only. Add 1 to the toughness characteristic of a model with this relic. When resolving an attack made against that model, reduce any damage inflicted by one to a minimum of one. That's not bad. If you wanted to do just a full, you know, tank character list, it looks like Iron Hands are the way to go.
Yeah. The only problem is it's only primary, so he's going to be very slow.
Yes. But again, I mean, with some of these rules, I would not be surprised to see Iron Hands running Land Raiders.
Until it gets touched by a Grot and then can't shoot.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, or until one of three shock attack guns on the other side of the board just deletes it.
Yeah.
That. There are times when I think the shock attack gun is the best thing in 40K, and then I realize that for balance reasons, it's one of the worst.
I mean, even the relic one, you're going to double fire it, and the first shot is going to one-shot a knight, and then the second one's going to do zero damage. And then the next five, zero damage. And then.
But, I mean, if you talk about popping a knight on your first shot, you've paid for everything involved in that already. And that's orcs. I mean, that's orcs in a nutshell.
For the next 10 games.
That's orcs in a nutshell. I mean, 1,000 points of the list could kill itself, and the other 1,000 can still beat you.
Yeah.
I'm skipping the mind forge because it's irrelevant. Betrayer's
force power.
Yeah, it's Betrayer's Bane. It's a combi melter replacement. You can choose between. It's just allowing you. I don't understand the difference between this and a combi melter. Is it just the ability to use it more than once?
It's just the melter is two shots.
Oh, hello.
Instead of one.
Oh, and you're actually allowed to shoot with both in the same turn.
Yeah, all the combi weapons have that, and then you take a minus one.
Right. An assault two melter gun is not terrible, but that would involve the Iron Hands getting close to somebody. And by then, you probably don't need a melta gun.
Yeah, they don't like
no. That is an inefficient use of firepower. Next up is the Tempered Helm, which for those who don't know, this is basically Kurov's Aquila, but for Space Marines. While the model with this relic is on the battlefield, you roll d6 for each command point you spend. On a 5-up, that CP is refunded. You can only have one command point refunded per battle round by this relic. Specifically, meaning that if you have other methods of generation, I'm assuming you're now allowed to regenerate two per turn.
Well, no, because the FAQ is still in effect.
Well, right, but I mean, do you think this is maybe a hint that they might be getting rid of that?
I can't see that they would do that. I think this is mainly just for people who either don't play match play or either haven't seen that FAQ just so that you don't have to keep looking at that FAQ. I would be very surprised if they took away the one CP per turn limit.
Just because of the Pandora's box, it would reopen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
mixing three different factions and I'll get CP back. And then,
I mean, I remember never running out of CP just with guard. I mean, because I was refunding on every single turn on a 5-up. It doesn't matter who's it, both sides. I think the average is I was playing with 70% more than I was starting the game with.
Yeah, the guard will do that. Because the problem with guard is they don't even have like stratagems they want to use their CP.
We don't even have stratagems that are good. Like I was playing mainly Deathcore, and there was nothing for me to spend my stratagem point, my CP on. It was hilariously worthless. I was re-rolling so many meaningless last cannon shots. It was actually kind of sad.
Yeah, and you end up doing like preliminary bombardment and all these weird stratagems.
It was literally turning over the codex and shaking it to get all the pregame stratagems to fall out. Last up is another legend from long ago, the Gorgon's Chain. A model with this relic has a 4+ invulnerable save. When resolving an attack with a ranged weapon against this model, subtract one with the wound roll. There's something that no one ever wanted to see again because of how broken it was the first time.
Yeah. I have flashbacks from Seven Dead with this relic.
I remember that. I have a 2-up invul save for the entire game. Oh, wait, I got one wound through. Now it's a 3-up. Oh, I got 2 wounds through. Now it's a 4-up. I mean, but it doesn't matter because you're never getting anything through my 2-up, 2-up. You mad? Let's see.
2-up rollable invul save, 2-plus field.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was always fun. Going to move on to Relics of the Raven Guard. Eh, I'm not reading the Ebon clause. They don't matter. The Armor of Shadows. When resolving an attack made with a weapon that has an armor penetration characteristic of -1, that weapon is treated as having an armor penetration characteristic of 0. In addition, when resolving an attack against a model from your army with this relic, an unmodified hit roll of 1, 2, or 3 always fails. And that's a standing rule, so you don't even have to spend this, so it's not a spent stratagem.
Yeah, and that one's on hit rolls, not
wound Jesus.
Rolls. So that one's actually not
that's
bad.
That's gross.
That can make you pretty survivable on your characters.
Your Tau would not enjoy that relic.
No.
That would be bad. Yeah, I mean, you're basically bouncing off of anything with Terminator, with anything with a 2-up. You're basically bouncing off of anything with a 2-up, and half your, well, what, 2/3 of your hits don't land? Or a third? With the +1?
Yeah, I mean, the +1 just doesn't do anything then, because it's unmodified hit rolls of 1, 2, 3.
So, okay, less dangerous to the Fire Warriors then.
Yeah, and it's still only on the one character. Which is just nice on, like, a Smash Captain that's going to go into a unit that hits on 2s and now they're hitting on 4s. Like a bunch of Gene Stealers that would normally be hitting on 2s with a Bruise Lord.
Also, it would be now decent protection against Eliminators, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Next up,
especially with their Ignore's Line of Sight that is +2 to hit. Now it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't like that rule either. The Raven Skull of Korvad. Once per turn, when resolving an attack made by a model from your army with this relic, you can reroll the hit, wound, or damage roll. In addition, if a model from your army with this relic is destroyed as a result of an attack made by an enemy unit, then until the end of the battle, when resolving an attack made by a friendly Raven Guard unit against that unit, add 1 to the hit roll. That's another thing that would go pretty good on a Smash Captain if you just threw it at a knight.
Yeah, just go suicide with Smash Captain into a knight.
Or like or Mortarion, you know, or anything big. Just anything worth 400 plus points, you just throw it at him and go, kill me and buff my whole army against you. I think we talked about Raven's Fury before. It's a special jump pack. A model from your army with this relic can choose to charge even if they advanced. Yeah, when a charge roll is made, you can reroll the dice. In addition, after that model finishes the charge move, you can select one unit within 1 inch and roll a d6. On a 4+, that unit suffers a mortal wound. Cool? Question mark?
Pretty good. Advance in charge is always helpful.
Yeah,
but less so for Raven Guard because of all the shenanigans you can do with deep striking and infiltrating, and you don't really need that huge threat range as much. I think there's also a Warlord trait that's just an aura of advance and charge, so that makes this relic not nearly as good.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not running that Warlord trait, you would maybe... Boy, we seem to be saying this a lot. Just put it on a Smash Captain. Ex Tenebris, which is a special relic bolter. Range 36, assault 3, strength 4, AP 2, AP minus 2, damage 2. It can target characters even if they are not the closest model. You add +1 to the hit roll, and the target does not receive the benefit of cover. Which, you know, cool, question mark. But...
Yeah, I think there's just better ways to snipe characters without taking a relic slot.
Yeah. The last one is Oppressor's Edge, I've never seen something replace a combat knife before, so I'm gonna mention it just for that unique quality. When the bear fights, it is strength +1, AP -2, and damage 1. Yeah, this is not worth replacing a relic. I'm sorry. The only thing about this that is special is that it does 3 damage against characters instead of 1.
1. So, yeah. I mean, it's nice on a Phobos captain because his only melee weapon is a combat knife. Yeah. So you actually make it kind of beat stick Phobos captain, but he doesn't really want to be a beat stick, so it seems kind of weird.
Plus, I mean, when we say beat stick, we mean he's going to bop support characters. He's never going to knock off any kind of dedicated combat character, most of whom will either just hit him with a thunder hammer or, you know, pick your other favorite double strength D3, D6 damage weapon, of which there are many. Next up, the Chad, the new Chad Space Marine, Torgeridon. Did you see that meme where they compared Shrike to Torgeridon?
No.
Okay. Go and look that up when you have a minute. It's absolutely hysterical. The first time I read it, I just commented below, there's no reason for any self-respecting man to play Raven Guard when you could play Torgeridon. Because there is no other word for it. This model is an absolute unit.
This is a thick boy.
Torgeridon is going to be, I'm not going to say that he's like the size of Gilliman, but he's, you know what, 2/3?
Yeah, he's like Marnius Calgar.
Yeah, like this is a thick boy. The best part about this, I do want to find his rules here. I'm assuming that the 2 guns on his shoulders are the grab gun. They're representing the grab gun.
Yeah, he's got a grab gun out there.
For those who don't remember, and then he's got a special. He has a special gigantic, only the Imperial Fists would have this power fist, called the Hand of Defiance, which is just hysterical. Strength times 3. Strength, let's say that again. Times 3. So he's fighting at strength 12, AP minus 3, and straight 3 damage. Oh, and he automatically rerolls ones to hit because he is the equivalent of a captain. He does also have a Signum Array, so he is the equivalent of a Devastator Sergeant. And then, when he fights a vehicle or building, you add 1 to the damage characteristic of any weapon used in that attack. So the Hand of Defiance would actually do 4 damage. Which is just...
That's just
ridiculous.
He's got 5 attacks too because he's Primaris. Right. So 6 with Shock Assault.
And he is more survivable than normal with a 3-up armor save, a 4-up invul, and 7 wounds. But he is...
And toughness 5 for Gravis.
Yeah, and toughness 5. But, you know, a 3-up, 4-up is kind of squishy. Like, it is definitely something you can punch through.
Oh, yeah. No Storm Shield.
No. But he would be, I think you would basically kind of see him auto include if you gave him a Storm Shield.
Lysander's got the Storm Shield.
I think he's almost auto include defending on price just for the Hand of Defiance.
I mean, the Signum Array is great, too. You get to pick a friendly Imperial Fist unit and they're. Ballista skill 2+ until the end of the phase for shooting.
Yeah, I mean, my only problem with the Signum Array is that it's never more than a +1 improvement for Marines, unless they've just...
Unless you have a degraded repulsor or something.
That's my only problem with that rule, and it's not a major problem. I do love this model, just like both in theme and then in usefulness. He is going to see play. Just as you would almost just kind of sit him with your backfield units between the captain's buff and if anything does. I mean, he's a Disco Lord killer.
Yeah, he's a great counter charge unit.
I don't want to say he's wounding discos on a. He's wounding discos on a 3, right?
A 2.
They are only T6. Yeah. There you go.
They only have 3 wounds through and they're dead because it's 4 damage.
I mean, that's as long as he gets the swing first. Ugh, I love that character. That's so much fun.
Yeah.
And he's is sweet. There a better word for an Imperial Fist relic than the Hand of Defiance? I think not. The other one that is new,
maybe the Hand
of Defiance. Yeah, I mean, or you could just call it. Let's see. I have to. Rogaldorn's Pimp Hand, I think, would probably be the other name for it. And if someone maybe, doesn't use,
maybe it is Thorn
Hand. That's true. I do want to find. We saw the rules for. There it is. Okay, cool. The other new one that was leaked, I don't want to say leaked, shall we say previewed a few weeks ago, is Ajax Agatone. We did talk, I think we talked about this when Mike and Alex were on last time. Oh, no. Okay, here's what I wanted to look at. We do have the rules for Vulcan Histon finally. He did not there, so he is not a Primaris, which is kind of lame. His stats have apparently not changed since the previous edition, so that's still movement 6, weapon skill, ballistic skill 2, strength 4, toughness 4, 5 wounds, 4 attacks, leadership 9, 2 plus save. He does have a storm shield equivalent, so he's a 2 up, 3 up. He is the equivalent of a captain okay. with the rights of battle rule. And then this is the fun part, the Forge Father rule. You can reroll hit rolls and you can reroll wound rolls for attacks made with flame or melted weapons by models in friendly salamander units while their unit is within 6 inches. So there's that difference again. All you need is one model within 6 of Vulcan, and everybody in that unit is rerolling hits and wounds with flamethrowers and melted weapons.
Yeah, that's great.
I think that probably this would be one of the ones that you would see kind of in a more mobile buff, not as much as a backfield just because of the flamer requirement. But then also, this is something that you could see bringing back multi-meltas, which really don't exist in the meta right now.
Yeah, I could see him being drop-potted in a lot with Sterngard.
Let me go ahead and link you to this because I don't think this is the link. Yeah, there it is. I just dropped it for you in the Zencaster chat. So let me know when you got it.
All right. That guy here.
Scrolling down. Let's see. We do have.
Yeah, so I think some of these were confirmed as fake.
Uh-huh. I'm going to assume that the 12-inch minus 2 leadership buff was probably one of them, because that's ridiculous. that's so obscene. I don't really know how to explain it. That's just too good, you know? That really is just way too good.
I think it also having massive clickbait posted on the picture.
Well, I think the way I understand it, they did that just as a, what do you call it, as a copyright protection, is I think what people are doing that now for.
Seems weird because, whoever leaked this already broke their NDA. So,
yeah, that's true.
And they blur out the points on the characters, which seems weird.
Oh, did they? Oh, I thought you just normally didn't see it.
Yeah, on the top picture.
Oh, yeah.
The points are blacked out.
I remember there being some kind of thing, especially with the list building apps, that you couldn't put the points in, but you could put the rules in or something along those lines. I think that might be why they do it. Or this could be all bullshit. You never know. But other than...
Yeah, I mean, Agaton having a rule that's identical to Corsaro Khan's rule of the plus one to wound with melee weapons when they make a charge is...
Seems suspect.
Uninspired.
Yeah. Also, we haven't seen anyone else listed with the Angels of Death rule, literally in their abilities, that I remember. I don't think it was on Tor Garadon's profile.
Let's see. Yeah.
It is. Okay. Well, then I'll shut the fuck up then. that shows how good how much I pay attention to detail. But let's see. Is there anything else in here of note? I mean, without being able to confirm any of this, I almost don't want to mention it. Warlord traits that are being rumored. +2 strength to the Warlord. Gives OBSEC to a non-troop unit. Warlord gets a 6+ feel no pain and regens a wound each turn. That would be very interesting. All friendly models within... I'm assuming this means all friendly models or friendly units within 6 can reroll the number of hits for a flame weapon. I almost think that maybe that might be worth trying with your giant block of Centurions.
Yeah, that would be... And then combining it with Vulcan for reroll wounds.
I mean, too. I don't know if that would be as good as the almost guaranteed assault, but it would definitely be better in terms of using them as a blocker. You would lose even fewer games against Gene Stealer Colts with that.
Oh yeah, I love the super speedy Centurions though.
It's so funny because nobody expects it. There's just no way to. There's really no way to plan for a Centurion unit moving 2.5 feet in a turn. Once per phase, one attack auto hits for the Warlord. I imagine that's probably a lie, a stand-in for something much better or much worse. And the last one is the Warlord gets +2 toughness.
Which that was in the original Space Marine book. I think it's just the generic Salamander's Warlord trait. So that one.
No, I mean the only problem is again. That means that at best you've spent your Warlord trait on making your Warlord at best toughness 7.
Unless you bring Brayar Ashmantle and then Hero of the Chapter him up to toughness 11.
Okay, that's true.
But then
you're doing that if he's the only guy on objective standing in front of an entire army, and then he just puts 2 middle fingers in the air and says good luck.
Yeah.
Let's see. All right. I think on that note of putting up 2 middle fingers and saying what up, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Ben, thank you very much for coming on back and standing in for Alex and Schwartz. Thank you all very much for listening. And we will all talk to you all next week, hopefully when we are back to full strength.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.